The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
You're listening to America's Web Radio. It's time now for the Doctor's Lounge Show with Dr. Scott Barber.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Doctor's Lounge. I'm Dr. Scott Barber, and you're listening to me on America's Web Radio. Happy to be back today. I missed my last show because I had a complication with a patient. I had to go to the operating room early in the morning. I apologize for that. And I'm happy to be back to be talking to you guys. And as you know, my mission in life is to promote free market healthcare. And I've been thinking a lot about what today's show is going to be about. And I started thinking about the freedom of healthcare, and then I realized that actually what I really am promoting is truth and freedom. I'm an American dyed-in-the-wool. My father was a naval veteran, fought in Vietnam. He's buried in Arlington National Cemetery with full military honors. And he used to tell me and my brothers all the time when we were growing up, the greatest gift that we ever received in life next to being healthy was being born in the United States of America, where he said it wasn't a perfect country. It's never going to be a perfect country. And the reason is because it's filled with people and it's run by people and it's a nation of people, and people are flawed and we're all sinners and we're all battling every day to be better. And because of that, we're going to have flaws, but it's better than any society that ever existed. The Constitution of the United States is the greatest political document that's ever been written, specifically because it doesn't limit the people or tell us what we have. It limits the government and tells them what they can't do to us. Barack Obama pointed that out as a flaw in the Constitution. He called it a document of negative rights. But the fact of the matter is that was the point, because as was documented in the Federalist paper, if men were angels, there'd be no need for government, but of course we are not. And medicine is just a major factor that contributes to the freedom in our life. And if we don't have sovereignty over our own bodies, if we don't have medical freedom, in fact, we don't have freedom at all. My father raised me to love this country. He raised me to value my freedom, and he raised me to try and be a better person. He instilled in me the idea that true fulfillment in life comes from service to others. And he was absolutely right. I'm blessed to be able to be a physician, to be able to take care of people, to have that be my life. It's really my passion. And when I look at what has happened to healthcare over the last 30 years, it really has deteriorated. And we all know that we're having difficulties these days when we have medical issues. We often find ourselves in conflict with the doctors in front of us, and it's getting increasingly more difficult for people to engage in independent thought or have alternative opinions. There always seems to be this system of experts that tell us what best practices are, and any deviation from those best practices is problematic. And this is really just a symptom of a bigger, or I guess I should say, it's just one facet of a bigger play here, that we actually are involved in the middle of a culture revolution. And healthcare is a cudgel that is slowly and now not so slowly taking away our freedoms. Now, in 1957, Mao Zedong, perhaps the greatest Marxist and communist in history, noted that not having the correct political opinion is like not having a soul. He talked about three types of people in the population: those who are complying, those who are not complying, and those who are unsure. He reduced the people's, he reduced the population to two types of people: the people and the enemies of the people, and those who agree are the people, and those who disagree with the oligarchical elites are the enemies of the people. And he dealt with them through a process he called hatecraft. He would create a system where he would say that the people, those who agree with the body politic, all we want is unity, And the only reason that we can't have unity is because the enemies of the people are preventing us. For example, many of us want to open up the country and to get back to our lives, but those who oppose vaccines and masks are preventing it from happening. And this simple system is being employed today, and I kind of want to connect the dots because in order for us to fight back, we have to do two things. First of all, we have to love the truth. And that's where I'm at. I'm one of these people. I don't necessarily believe I'm always right, but I do believe that I have the right to ask questions. I have the right to think out loud, and I have sovereignty over my own body. And so I want to be able to always pursue truth. And by pursuing truth, I have to have the ability to openly debate and to express my opinions without being persecuted. And that is getting increasingly more difficult. So the way that we fight back against this cultural revolution is we all must love the truth. And number two, we need to expose everyone to the process that they are using, the hate craft of today. And by doing this, we will inoculate the population to this process, and hopefully we can save ourselves. Now, I got a call or a text. I was playing golf on the weekend with a good friend of mine, and I got a call or a text from a friend who told me that her sister was in another state, had recently given birth via C-section. They sent her home, and her sutures opened up the following day. She had to come back to the hospital. They had emergency surgery with a general surgeon, and they accidentally overdosed her on antibiotics and sent her into renal failure. And my friend contacted me and gave me the same sad story about how the hospital where this patient is admitted is not very communicative of the situation. They're sort of just telling them how things are. They're not really available for information, and they're making it very difficult for them to ask questions and to get other opinions. And this has increasingly been a problem in the hospitals, as we have seen an entrenchment of this one-size-fits-all, top-down model of healthcare, where a few people at the top create a system of best practices developed by so-called experts, and anybody who deviates from this pattern is sort of an enemy of the people. And we saw that over these past few years with COVID. Now, one of the things that I've been trying to do on this show is point out how the system was used against us. Now, I wanted to play you a compilation of all the news reports talking about the mortality rate from COVID being 3.4%. But of course, when I went to my post that I had on X, formerly known as Twitter, of course, it had been memory holed and deleted. And I got this clip from the great Kevin Bass on his X feed. And it just seems to me every time I go back, I've been saving clips and things like that for many years. And every time I go back to, or not every time, but many times I go back to find something, and they've been memory holed. And this is a tactic that has been used by tyrants throughout history. And all you have to do to understand what's happening today is read George Orwell's 1984, because it seems to be a user manual for what's going on. But I want you guys to remember back, they came out with the news reports that the mortality rate from COVID was 3.4%. And I know that I've done this stuff a lot on my shows, but I think it's really important that you commit this stuff to memory so that you can be inoculated from this happening again in the future, because it will be attempted in the future. We have a huge presidential election coming up, and the people in charge simply, in my humble opinion, will not allow things to just happen naturally with a free, open, and fair election. And so we are all going to have to be vigilant so that we can maintain our freedom and our sovereignty. Now, I think we all remember that when the world I'm sorry, when the Royal College of London and subsequently the World Health Organization came out and told the world that the mortality rate for COVID was 3.4%. We also had a series of state-controlled experts coming out to tell us that the vaccine was safe and effective. And let me just play this to sort of remind you. This is taken from Tucker's show.
Over the past 10 years, and there are almost too many to count, this may be the most painful of all. It's almost hard to watch, but we're going to play it anyway. Remember this?
Make your plan to get one of these vaccines. They are safe and effective.
If there's one message that needs to cut through all this, the vaccines are safe. I promise you, they are safe and effective. Listen to Dr. Fauci.
When we say that something is safe and effective, we mean it's safe and effective for everyone.
Our vaccinations against COVID-19 are safe. They are effective, and they're more important than ever. This vaccine has gone through the necessary and rigorous evaluation that ensures the vaccine is safe and highly effective.
So what you heard there was a compilation of FDA Director Governor Gretchen Whitmer, President Joe Biden, Anthony Fauci. You saw the FDA Director, the HHS Director, and all these different people guaranteeing us that the vaccine was safe and effective. Now, people like me were a little bit like, well, wait a second, it's brand spanking new. And I had been reading the research about it, and I was kind of like, that's, you know, that's just not common sense, right? We just don't know at this point. And that's what I said. And of course, we all know about my persecution, and not just me, others persecuted for trying to pursue the truth and ask questions. And it was frustrating. We then had, people in the media, and other experts, telling us that the vaccine was not only safe and effective, but anybody who refused to take the vaccine was essentially committing a hate crime and was perpetrating the pandemic to spread. And let's listen to the infamous Rachel Maddow and her "the vaccine stops." It stops.
Vaccine being able, excuse me, it means for instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person to person, spreading and spreading, sickening some of them, but not all of them. And the ones that it doesn't sicken don't know they have it. And then they give it to even more people because they didn't recognize they were right. Instead of the virus being able to hop from person to person to person, potentially mutating and becoming more virulent and drug resistant along the way. Now we know that the stops. With every vaccinated person. A vaccinated person gets exposed to the virus. The virus does not infect them. The virus cannot then use that person to go anywhere else. It cannot use a vaccinated person as a host to go get more people. That means the vaccines will get us to the end of this.
So I think you really can't get the power of Rachel Maddow on her show of misinformation. It's just so ironic how right in your grill it is, right? I mean, it was just a flat out lie at this point. I mean, there's no way that they could have known that it was safe and effective. There's no way that they could have known it stopped, but yet they went out there and they were trying to use a cudgel to get everybody to comply. Remember what we were talking about with Mao's two types of people. There's the people and then there's the enemy of the people. We look at things. There's those who comply, those who refuse to comply, and then there are those who are unsure. And so they use this technique of experts and media and propaganda to try and convince people basically to comply. And healthcare is a really good tool to make this happen because obviously people are very interested in maintaining their health. And if people feel that their health is threatened, basically if you can scare people, it's a good way to get people to comply. Now, it wasn't just Rachel Maddow and people in the media, but we also had Rochelle Walensky, who at the time was the director of the CDC, And so she was on MSNBC and she infamously declared that vaccinated people do not carry the virus and they don't get sick. Let's listen to her again.
Today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data. Our data from the CDC today suggests, that vaccinated people do not carry the virus, don't get sick, and that it's not just in the clinical trials, but it's also in real world data.
So she's making a statement there that's pretty emphatic. And at the time that she made it, it sounded like she had all the receipts, right? It sounds like you get the vaccine, you can't get it. End of story, right? So I look back at that. And I remember at the time thinking to myself, like, how can you make these claims? Like, I went to medical school, and when I was in medical school, this is not my opinion. It's not my idea. I didn't come up with this. I was trained. I was taught. It takes like 10 years to fully understand all of the ramifications of a vaccine. But there was just this constant push, to get the vaccines through the media. And through these experts, whether it was the FDA, the World Health Organization, the CDC, and anybody who asked questions was attacked, and they were ridiculed, and they were persecuted. And, you know, I would say at the time, like, hey, listen, my attitude is sort of like anything you do in life like this is a risk-benefit analysis. And I felt that it would be up to individuals to be able to make their own decisions and have sovereignty over their own bodies and to be able to decide for themselves whether they wanted to take a risk on the virus or take a risk on the vaccine. And you know, this was just really seemed like common sense to me and obvious to me. And sometimes I look back on this and I wonder, am I just at that age where I grew up in a different world? When I was young, and I went to school, I had teachers talk to me about my freedom and my freedom of speech and my ability to have my own opinions. And they told me about American history where people had died on battlefields to preserve that right to me, and how great men who were human beings, meaning they were flawed and they were sinners, they still managed, even with all of their flaws, all of their sinning, all of their problems, they still managed to put together this amazing document, the Constitution, that created the greatest society in human history, that allowed people with individual rights, property rights, to reach their potential. And because of this, we became a wealthy nation, because the entrepreneurial spirit and the can-do attitude was really fostered in this country. And we're a great country, and we're generally a good country. And that's not to say that you can't look at things in our history and say, okay, well, we did some bad things, whether it was slavery or whatever. The point is, there's no human being on earth that is free. There's been only one perfect person. His name was Jesus. Other than that, we are all sinners and we're all battling to be better. But when you consider the way human history has worked, it's really been the Constitution, which is predicated on Judeo-Christian values, that has led to this society, and it is at risk right now. And in my opinion, everything that's happening is an attempt to break down our freedom, to break down our sovereignty over our bodies, and they make it difficult for us to fight. And this is not my opinion. I mean, let's listen to Anthony Fauci talk about how difficult, when you make people's lives difficult, they start to lose their ideals. Let's listen to him.
Now, this newly resurfaced interview reveals what he really wanted out of all those COVID mandates.
Once people feel empowered and protected legally, you are going to have schools, universities, and colleges are going to say, you want to come to this college, buddy? You're going to get vaccinated. It's been proven that when you make it difficult for people in their lives, they lose their ideological bull and they get vaccinated.
Wow. So it almost sounds like he says, you know, just make it hard on people, screw their lives over, and they'll comply, right? Remember, we talked about the types of people, right? Those who comply, those who don't comply, and those who are unsure. right? And so Fauci is saying straight there, straight up, like, hey, listen, it's been proven scientifically that if you make people's lives miserable, they're going to lose their ideological bullshit and they're going to get vaccinated. And that to me, just in and of itself, is offensive, because fundamentally, we are a free people. And I was raised to believe that I had innumerable rights that could not be infringed on by my government. And I'm seeing more and more that people seem to be willing to give up their freedom in order to have security. And that's why healthcare is such a frightening cudgel for those who want to implement this, you know, world order, this new world order or one world order, whatever you want to call it. But we are going to have to fight back. Now, you see these people telling us that the vaccine is safe and effective, that if you get it, you can't, you know, if you get the vaccine, you can't possibly get sick. And then time goes on, we start seeing problems, and we start hearing things like this from Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director.
Our vaccines are working exceptionally well. They continue to work well for Delta with regard to severe illness and death. They prevent it. But what they can't do anymore is prevent transmission. So if you're going home to somebody who has not been vaccinated, to somebody who can't get vaccinated, somebody who might be immunosuppressed or a little bit frail, somebody who has comorbidities that put them at high risk, I would suggest you wear a mask in public indoor settings.
Okay, so all I'm trying to do is to connect the dots here. We just played her saying, if you get the vaccine, then you can't get it. If you can't get it, then you can't transmit it. Then she comes in, and now she's saying, well, it works great against the old Delta variant, but the new variants, it can no longer prevent transmission. And then she kind of brushes over it, and I'm thinking to myself, well, wait a second. I was told that if I took this vaccine, that I can't get it, and I can't pass it on. And now you're just saying that I can pass it on, which, by the way, that was kind of the biggest thing about vaccines, right? That was one of the major selling points. That's what Rachel Maddow told us. If you get it, it stops. That means it can't use you evil people who refuse to get the vaccine to go and infect another person. It stops and it's end, she says. And so I'm sitting here saying to myself, as a common sense kind of person, it's like, all right, so she wasn't accurate about that. I don't think I'm listening to this person anymore. But sadly, lots of people still do, and I don't understand why. Now, it got worse from there. It wasn't just that it stopped transmission, but it also turned out that the vaccine had some side effects, which, of course, that to me was just common sense, right? I've talked about it many times on this show that the concept of how the vaccine works is very simple biology. I mean, it's like high school biology, right? You've got these lipid nanoparticles that are like little cells that contain the messenger RNA for the spike protein. They inject it into your body. These little lipid nanoparticles then bind onto all your normal cells and inject the messenger RNA into the normal cells. That messenger mRNA then goes to the ribosomes, where the mRNA is translated into the spike protein. And then that spike protein is then transported from the ribosome to the cell membrane of normal cells to exhibit the spike protein, which then stimulates your immune system to attack. And I just remember thinking to myself when I first saw that, like, why would I want that? I don't want that. Like, I don't want my normal cells exhibiting the spike protein and stimulating my immune system attack. It seems to me you could get stuff like, I don't know, myocarditis, right? Your cells in your heart exhibit the spike protein, your immune system attacks, and then you get inflammation of the heart. And other things are happening, right? We see the clotting, the strokes. And again, I'm being careful here now because I don't want to be canceled and I don't want to be ridiculed and attacked. I'm just saying here the CDC now says that they're going to start investigating vaccine-associated strokes. Let's just listen.
Regarding the COVID vaccine, the CDC is now saying that there has been enough cases of people who have had the vaccine, received the vaccine, and then suffered a stroke. The agency will now be investigating any potential links between the shots and strokes in some of those patients.
So we are just getting word.
Okay, so I don't understand again. My experts and my renowned agencies and institutions that are designed to protect me and only look out for my best interests told me that the mortality rate for this virus was high, that this vaccine was totally safe and effective, that if I didn't get it and wear the mask, by the way, that I was a bad person in subjecting all these other people to it. And then after that happens, then they come out and they say, hey, listen, we got to investigate these strokes. And I'm like, wait a second. I thought you said it was safe and effective. How is it that you're now saying, like, we need to look at this even more? Now, you might be asking yourself, well, I've had this happen with several of my friends who say, well, you got to listen. You got to understand that they were under stress to, come out with something to manage this pandemic because we were in the middle of something that was horrible. And, you know, the fact of the matter is that is not what happened. That was not what happened. This was a concerted effort to use propaganda to get people to use this vaccine. And they didn't know if it was going to help or not. And I know this because we simply asked them. Here's Deborah Birx. I got this from the great Kevin Bass off his ex account, Kevin Bass. This is Deborah Birx in congressional hearings and being asked about what she thought.
Cannot make the conclusion that the vaccine will do better than natural infection, although it can often do slightly better.
I think you're an expert. You were on the task force. You were part of this effort when you were in the previous administration, and you're saying in this administration that you can't rule out the fact that our government was lying to us when they told us the vaccinated could not get the virus.
I don't know about their discussions that they had in the task force. So I can't tell you that. I can tell you as a family member who had individuals that were susceptible, of course we got everybody vaccinated, but we still use layered protection during surges because I knew potentially the vaccine immunity would wane like natural immunity waned. And there was evidence that every 4 months reinfection was occurring in South Africa.
Wow. When the government told us that the vaccinated couldn't transmit it, was that a lie or was that a guess? Or is it the same answer?
I think it was hope.
I think it was hope. I think it was hope. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? I mean, this is really infuriating because, you know, we're starting to see more and more. I haven't even got to all of the research out there that's showing the bad stuff that's happening with the vaccine. But finally, some places are starting to remove the vaccine from its schedule and just remove it from use altogether. I haven't even gotten there yet. I'm just having normal hesitation from any new drug of any kind, right? I mean, these things take time to figure out. I wasn't even saying at the time that it wasn't a reasonable consideration to take the vaccine. I was just saying in any situation, when I have sovereignty over my own body and you come out with any kind of new medication or drug or whatever, that there are usually risks associated with that. And because there are risks associated with that, I should be able to have the sovereignty over my own body to decide whether I want to do it. But of course, they had to put pressure on us by preventing us from working, preventing us from traveling, preventing us from getting into schools or do anything else that we want to do so that we lost our ideological bull, as Dr. Fauci commented. We're going to get back to more of this in just a minute. We're going to go to a break. I'm Dr. Scott Barber. You're listening to me on America's Web Radio. This is the Doctor's Lounge. We'll be right back.
This is Dr. Hal Schurz from the Doctor's Lounge on America's Web Radio. I want to thank you for your support. Our show is brought to you by the Docs for Patient Care Foundation, which is the only physician-led healthcare think tank in the country. Our website is www.d4pcfoundation.org. We need you to support our organization so that we can continue to bring you this show and the information that you need so that you can support the healthcare of you and your family.
Hey folks, this is Victor with the On Point with Victor show. Make sure you listen every Tuesday 1 to 2, only right here on America's Web Radio, the On Point with Victor show. Remember folks, I'm not angry, I'm just right. And you can find out why every Tuesday from 1 to 2, the On Point with Victor show, only right here on America's Web Radio.
If you want the truth about politics, medicine, weapons, classic cars, and more, you'll want to tune in to America's Web Radio. You can listen to all of your favorite shows live at www.americaswebradio.com or on demand on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. That's www.americaswebradio.com.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Doctor's Lounge. I'm Dr. Scott Barber, and you're listening to us on America's Web Radio. We were talking about the fact that the experts in our government and in our media were telling us that the vaccine was safe and effective, and then they started saying, well, it's not so effective, and then they started getting to it's not so safe. And all I'm trying to do is connect the dots so that in the future you guys will be less reticent to surrender your freedoms to these so-called experts, and that you will develop a pattern of using your own brain to understand things. When I was in medical school, I had a mentor that said, Scott, you're going to know a lot of stuff in these first 4 years of medical school. You're going to be reading around the clock, and this will be the smartest time of your life. And he said, as you go through your career, people will present things to you. And he said to me, don't you ever shut off your brain. You always analyze everything for yourself. Don't accept what anybody tells you. And if things don't make sense to you, ask questions. And that's not just true of a medical doctor. That's true of any citizen living their lives, whether you are getting a mortgage on your house or you want to buy something. That was when I was young, they used to teach us caveat emptor, right? Buyer beware. That was a major part of functioning in a capitalist society. And it seems to me that people are getting more and more reticent to use their own brains. And it seems to me that people are being trained and, dare I say, indoctrinated to go along with the so-called experts, and they are being incentivized not to use their own intellect and to question anything. And I think Dr. Fauci pointed out quite correctly that it's been proven that when you make people's lives hard, they get rid of their ideological bullshit. Yeah, I mean, this is unbelievable to me. Now, I was just making the point before we went to the break that if you're going to give me something that has potential side effects, it should be up to me to make that decision. Well, they weren't telling us too much about the side effects in the beginning. They were just telling us it was safe and effective, and basically making the point, like, we had propagandists in the media telling us they were mocking people who were doing their own research, right? I've played clips of that. Don Lemon and some of these other idiots making comments about people doing their own research as if we were some sort of, you know, oh, I don't know, enemies of the state, enemies of the people, non-compliance. You know, that's a tool that they use to get us to comply. And I want you to hear this. I got this off of Steve Kirsch's Steve Kirsch's X, which was formerly Twitter. And this is talking at a congressional hearing about the side effects of the hepatitis B vaccine, and it's pertinent to our current conversation. I want you to listen to this.
Partial list of printed adverse events for just one of the hepatitis B vaccines, Engerix-B. Here are the side effects. Herpes zoster, meningitis, thrombocytopenia, anaphylaxis, hypersensitivity syndrome, arthralgia, arthritis, urticaria, erythema multiforme, encephalopathy, swelling of the brain, just like the COVID vaccine, multiple sclerosis, neuritis, hypoesthesia, paresthesia, Guillain-Barré syndrome, paralysis, Bell's palsy, optic neuritis, paralysis, paresis, seizures, syncope, transverse myelitis, conjunctivitis, keratitis, tinnitus, vertigo, tachycardia, apnea, bronchospasms, including asthma-like symptoms, dyspepsia, alopecia, angioedema, eczema, and Stevens-Johnson syndrome. That's just one vaccine. That vaccine manufacturer has all these side effects in the warning list because why? It is stipulated by the FDA that there is a reasonable belief that they are causally related to the vaccine. That's why they're there. They're not adding them just because they think they should, because they have to. The warning label lists nearly 50 potential side effects, many of them serious, and that is just the first vaccine given to a baby on their first day of life. By the way, The safety study for that hepatitis B vaccine was only 4 days long and had no placebo comparator.
Okay, so what's important about that vaccine is that the hepatitis vaccine is like every other vaccine and every other drug for that matter. Every drug has side effects, right? We used to call them, when I was in medical school, we used to have like journal club conversations about things like side effects and whether we should even use the term side effects, because the reality is that every drug has effects. You give somebody a drug, it has effects. They're not inert. They're doing something to you. And if we, you know, we like those effects, then great. If we don't like those effects, then we call them side effects. But for those of you who are not medical professionals, a lot of those were big words he was using. It's not really important for you to understand them. What's important for you to know is that there were a lot of them, and some of that stuff was real bad. And then let me have another thought crime here. So hepatitis B is a type of virus that is usually transmitted through exchange of bodily fluids. So sexually transmitted, we see it with IV drug abusers sharing dirty needles. It's not really something I'm worried about my infant child contracting. And so it begs the question, why is this one of the first vaccines that we give somebody right off the bat? I'm just asking questions and thinking out loud, but it just seems to me that the person who's getting the vaccine has actually beyond an infinitesimal risk of contracting this virus. And yet there are all these side effects. It seems to me that any sort of commonsensical type person would have questions about that. And of course, it seems like we're not allowed to ask questions anymore. So we have shown where I have demonstrated where, and there are so many more clips that I could have played. I'm just trying to connect the dots really quickly so that we can see what's going on. And we saw that we had the media and our so-called experts guaranteeing us that it was safe and effective. And that was done right after they terrified everybody by using the false claim that there was a 3.4% mortality, which anybody who understands statistics and viruses knew that that was absolutely false right off the bat. And looking back on things, it almost seems like it was designed to get people all stressed out in an effort to obtain compliance from the population, if that makes sense to you. Now, from the 3.4% mortality lie, let's just call it what it was, followed by the experts and the propagandists and the media telling us that it was safe and effective and ridiculing us that, you know, we were committing hate crimes by not getting it, Rachel Maddow, it stops. You can't use you to go infect another person. That's how we're going to get out of this. They shut our businesses down, our churches down, all that stuff. Not our strip clubs and liquor stores. No, those stayed open, but just, you know, churches and your businesses and, you know, other stuff like that got shut down. Almost seems like they're creating a people's list and an enemy of the people's list. That's just how I look at things. Then we start seeing where Rochelle Walensky, the CDC director, tells us that what the vaccines can no longer do is prevent transmission. So it's like, oh, I thought you said it was safe and effective. Now it's not effective. And then, oh, and there's some bad stuff going on. We see that the CDC is going to start investigating vaccine-associated strokes. And Deborah Birx in a congressional hearing saying, well, we didn't exactly know the vaccine was going to work. We were hoping that it was going to work. Wow, that's weird, because I thought you said it was absolutely safe and effective. And now, as they are starting to be held to account, as things fall apart, they're kind of using, I don't know, weasel terminology to get out of this stuff. Let's listen to Dr. Asim Malhotra. I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. He's a very prominent cardiologist in the United Kingdom, and he is a media guy. He's super popular. I think of him kind of like a British Dr. Drew or something like that. Let's listen to what he has to say about two former Tory ministers who acknowledged some excess deaths from these vaccines. That's kind of interesting. Let's hear what he has to say.
I've now spoken to two former Conservative Party ministers, one-on-one. I've had lots of time with both of these people. I won't name them because I want to protect their confidentiality for obvious reasons. But through those conversations, one, there was an acknowledgement that the COVID mRNA vaccines, of course, a big problem and are probably a big factor behind the excess deaths. But the second issue, James, is this. One of those ministers said to me, Asim, accepting what I've said, there's a big problem with getting this out before the general election because this essentially may collapse the government. I mean, they, you know, one of the prides of this particular government has been the rollout of the vaccine. And interestingly, as you know, James, only a few days ago, the BBC reported on the fact that during the COVID inquiry, a decision has been made that any concerns and issues related to the COVID vaccine, specifically with heart issues, is going to only occur after the general election. That tells you everything you need to know.
Wow, that's kind of sketchy. So you've got conservative members of the British Parliament that are concerned about excess deaths related to the vaccine and talking about, but we ain't going to talk about this till after the election. Kind of sounds like a political agenda there. And, you know, they're not really too concerned about what happens to us little people out here. And this is what blows my mind. You know, as I think to myself, I'm a regular guy. You know what I mean? Like, when I talk to my friends about this stuff, like, I'm not, you know, it's weird. I'm living in this day and age where because I love the truth and because I pursue the truth and because I'm an independent thinker, most people who know me consider me a psycho right wing, you know, pathological person. And I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I went to school, you know, I played sports, you know, I got a college degree, I went to medical school. I've been married to the same wife for 30 years. I got my kids and, you know, I go to Little League and all that kind of stuff. And I'm just wondering what exactly about me is so out there and so over the top. And then, you know, I get pilloried for certain things and I look back and I say, okay, so I said masks don't work and it's not my idea. You know what I mean? I didn't come up with that. That's how I was trained. Now, I did a really good job of learning what I was told to learn, like masks don't work. And when I said it, you know, he's a hater, he's a spreader of misinformation, he's going to get people killed. And now the, you know, the data comes out and they confirm that the masks don't work, right? So I'm thinking to myself, all right, where's the apology? Where's the, you know what, actually that guy was saying something that turned out to be true back when it was unpopular to be true. Maybe we should listen to that guy. And then you got Rachel Maddow, who's like telling you things that are just demonstrably false at this point. And yet people still seem to listen to her. It kind of blows my mind. And now we're starting to see that, like, wait a second. It's not only that it wasn't effective, but it's turning out that maybe it's not so safe. And so people are asking questions. And because people are asking questions, it seems that asking these questions is having a deleterious effect on compliance. And, you know, we know that Mao said there are only two types of people and enemies of the people. And the enemies of the people are the ones who are complying. So it's a scary kind of situation. And, you know, it's getting worse by the day. Now I want you to listen to Dr. Drew. So we just played, Dr. Asim Malhotra, the cardiologist from the United Kingdom. Now let's play kind of our American person, Dr. Drew, who's noting that 50% of vaccinated people had permanent heart damage. That's kind of sketchy. I would like to ask questions about that. Let me listen.
It's more common than we thought. People are like, well, it's mild, it's no big deal, it's self-limited, blah, blah. Look, in my world, throughout my entire career, 40-year career, myocarditis is a medical emergency. It's a dire problem. A publication just came out 5 days ago in Circulation, a major cardiology journal. An excellent study, and it took my breath away. I didn't know why it wasn't headline news. It's a large study, and it showed that approximately half of the young males that got myocarditis had permanent heart damage. Yep. Permanent. That means that we don't know what percentage are going to be disabled by this as they get older, are going to develop heart failure, or are going to need cardiac transplants, some of them.
Oh my God.
It's breathtaking, this study, and why it wasn't a big headline. I've sort of sent it around a little bit because I don't understand why people aren't reacting to it. So many 27.
Yeah, I don't understand why people aren't reacting to it. Well, maybe it's because the media just kind of keeps making these statements in ways that don't really get your attention, right? This is kind of like stop the presses. It's kind of like when the New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet came out with the fake, fraudulent, phony, made-up, completely fraudulent studies suggesting that hydroxychloroquine was not only ineffective at treating COVID or preventing COVID, but that it was also cardiotoxic and dangerous. And then 2 weeks after publishing those studies, they had to retract them when they were caught and busted making it up. You know, and I had my friends, a couple of my friends, when I would present this to them, they would say, well, you know, they were under a lot of pressure to get things out there so that we could protect everybody. And I'm like, dude, that is not what happened. This is not like they misinterpreted data or made an honest mistake. They made it up completely. It was completely fabricated. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a second. The New England Journal of Medicine and The Lancet are the number one and number two medical journals on the face of the earth. And they knowingly faked studies. Like, that blows my mind. And this is an attack on the institutions, right? And this is part of what goes on in a cultural revolution. I'm going to tie this all together when we get to the end of the podcast. But, you know, this is serious stuff. Now you're talking about young people who, commonsensically, if you just look at the information available, young people were never really at risk from the COVID virus. They still aren't. And these new viruses are less virulent than the original. But young people didn't really seem to have a problem with this particular virus. And a lot of it had to do with their relatively immature immune systems not having this great inflammatory response. That was really what was getting people. And it was very clear from the data, I know, because I'm a scientist and I just looked at myself. I didn't have somebody telling me. I was counting up the numbers myself. I was looking at all of the cases myself. And it was obvious in 5 minutes, not 5 minutes, but you know what I mean. It was obvious right away that the people that were at risk were older folks with comorbid conditions, people in their 70s, right? And that young people were bulletproof. And then as more and more data came out, it had all kinds of studies that showed the kids were like ridiculously not susceptible to this COVID virus. I mean, in a way that, you know, if you look at the most nefarious interpretation of all of the things that have happened over the past several years, right? If the greatest conspiracy theory that these global cabal of governments unleashed this virus that was man-made in a lab to, you know, get control of the world and help implement this, you know, globalist one world order. If you believe that, like the data that was coming out about how kids were so protected was like an absolute like thorn in their side. Like, man, do the kids have to be this bulletproof? It makes it really hard to demand that they get vaccinated. And that's the part that I'm confused about is you got these people that have, you know, regardless of their political viewpoint, my assumption is people love their children. And if you love your children, why would you give them this new medicine that has definitely, for sure, not my opinion, it has definitely got side effects. And it's being given to them for a disease that they have almost no risk of being harmed from. Like, they are still keeping this on the pediatric vaccine schedule, and I just don't understand it, okay? So, you know, we got all this stuff coming out. We got British Tory ministers talking about all the excess deaths. There's so much more. I'm just kind of touching on stuff. I'm trying to connect the dots, but you got to understand these are CDC studies. This is not like, you know, psycho right wingers or whatever, psycho anti-vaxxers are going against the government. This is the CDC itself coming out with these studies, and people are just noticing like, wow, look at the data. 50% of vaccinated had permanent heart damage. That's like unbelievable to me. Now, then we had this, and I'm going to play it because it seems to me that this will be memory hold at some point, but the great Marty Makary at a congressional hearing talking about the greatest perpetrator of misinformation. I know I've played this a lot, but you need to hear it again. Let's go.
The greatest perpetrator of misinformation during the pandemic has been the United States government. Misinformation that COVID was spread through surface transmission, that vaccinated immunity was far greater than natural immunity, that masks were effective. Now we have the definitive Cochrane review. What do you do with that review? Cochrane is the most authoritative evidence body in all of medicine and has been for decades. Do you just ignore it, not talk about it? that myocarditis was more common after the infection than the vaccine. Not true. It's 4 to 28 times more common after the vaccine. That young people benefit from a booster. Misinformation. Our two top experts on vaccines quit the FDA in protest over this particular issue, pushing boosters in young, healthy people. The data was never there. That's why the CDC never disclosed hospitalization rates among boosted Americans under age 50. The vaccine mandates would increase vaccination rates. The George Mason University study shows it didn't. It did one thing. It created never-vaxxers. Over and over again, we've seen something that goes far beyond using your best judgment with the information at hand. We've seen something which is unforgivable, and that is the weaponization of medical research itself. The CDC putting out their own shoddy studies, like their own study on natural immunity, looking at one state for 2 months, when they had data for years on all 50 states. Why did they only report that one sliver of data? Why did they salami slice the giant database? Because it gave them the result they wanted. Same with masking study. Well, the data has now caught up in giant systematic reviews, and the public health officials were intellectually dishonest. They lied to the American people.
Okay, so the point that I'm trying to make, the dots that I'm trying to connect is, they used a medical situation to try and control our behaviors and get us to comply with the government, comply with the elites that control everything, the people who run the country. And they used a paradigm where they tried to use experts, or, you know, government deemed experts and the media, to tell us what was right and what was wrong, and that anybody who asked questions was persecuted in some way. They were either canceled or prevented from traveling or prevented from going to school or prevented from going to church, or, you know, had licenses taken away. And then we started to realize that these experts who told us that it was safe and effective were not accurate. And listen, you don't even have to ascribe any personality to this, you know, any intent, right? They just factually were wrong. And, you know, why they were, you could call it an honest mistake. You could call it an overt lie. It doesn't matter. At the end of the day, these people were absolutely wrong. I'm proving it to you. I'm playing you their own words where they said it's safe and effective. And then they're telling us, well, we had hoped that it worked. And then they're saying, okay, we're going to look at strokes and permanent heart damage. And then you got Dr. Marty Makary at a congressional hearing saying the greatest perpetrator of misinformation during the pandemic was the United States government. And then after all that, it's as if this didn't happen. You got the new CDC director talking to us about the new COVID vaccine coming out in the fall. Listen to this psychosis. Hang on. So the new CDC director expects a new COVID vaccine this fall.
Flu shot and an updated COVID vaccine. We also shared on Friday that we expect and anticipate there's going to be an updated COVID vaccine coming this fall. Right. So plan now. Yeah. Right. It's March. So you could think ahead when you're going to get your flu shot in the fall. You're going to get another updated COVID vaccine. And the reason for it is because this virus continues to change. That's OK. We can stay one step ahead of it. We have the tools to do it. We just need to use them. So
I mean, can you believe it? That it's like the CDC director coming out and it's like, we're not still learning about all the bad stuff that just happened. And she's acting like, hey, we got the next one coming out. Let's just everybody step up to the plate and get it. It blows your mind. Now, I want to close the show because I want to tie this all together. But we got James Lindsay presenting at CPAC. And I contemplated whether it's about 6 minutes long. I want to play a little bit of this because he really articulates well what is happening to us. And I was going to try and shorten it up, but I want you to hear what he has to say, because this connects all the dots and we all have to understand that it's our pursuit of truth and our knowledge of the scam that's going to inoculate us from them doing this to us again. Listen to what he has to say here at CPAC.
Good morning, y'all. Brief isn't my brand, so I'm going to try to be brief, which means I'm going to cut out the pleasantries and the jokes. I want to quote, we've already had Stalin quoted, so we're, just to put the context of what's going on, I'm going to quote a lesser-known quote from another tyrannical dictator, and that's Mao Zedong. In 1957, he not so famously said, "Not to have correct political opinions is like not having a soul." And I think that that is kind of a banner for the lives that we've been living for the last few years. And that's very unfortunate, but it's also very telling. My talk is titled, which I found out this morning, "The Target is You." What I want to talk to you about is actually the politics of compliance is the name I've given this. And it's actually derived from a strategy that Mao Zedong used. But to make the politics of compliance work, the target is actually you. And I don't just mean you with wrong political opinions who don't have souls. I mean everybody. There are generally three categories of people where it comes to the politics of compliance. There are the people who are complying, there are the people who are refusing, and the people who aren't sure. And all three are targeted by the politics of compliance, roughly the same way, actually, with the same dynamic. The goal is, of course, to get the compliant to feel better than everybody else, but also frustrated with everybody else. It is to convince those who are not sure to join the program and to begin to comply, and it is to use the people who refuse to comply as the wedge around which the entire thing turns. In fact, it's to dehumanize them and motivate the other two groups to try to destroy them. So Mao Zedong very simply took over China with a very small number of conceptual concepts that I'm lumping together in what I'm calling a politics of compliance. It's he separated the population into two broad categories. I just mentioned three. Well, he cut it into two. So there's an oversimplification, and those two categories are the people and the enemies of the people. Not to put too fine a point on it, that's what he called them. The people and the enemies of the people. And what he said is, who are the people? Well, he gives this kind of historical record in 1957 of who counted as the people when. And there's a consistent running theme through his you know, eight or nine maybe examples of different historical periods of the Chinese story, whether it's the Japanese War, the Sino-Japanese War, the second one, whether it's the period of building socialism after he took power in 1949, whether it's during his first, second, or third five-year plan. And the examples all have the single theme that the people are the people who agree with Mao, and the enemies of the people are the people who don't agree with Mao.
So that goes on for another few minutes, and I'm going to play it next time when we have more time, because I really think it's important. We're going to expand on it. But at the end of the day, he points out that the way that we resist this is we inoculate the population by understanding that that is the plan, right? It's this system where he's trying to create a wedge between those who comply and those who don't comply. And they use the experts, the elites, and the propagandists in the media to compel us to comply. And the way we fight is we must love the truth, not just like it, not just hope for it. We must love the truth enough to fight for it and to say it. And we need to expose people to the techniques that they're using. And by doing that, we will be able to inoculate ourselves against it and fight against it. Healthcare is a big deal. You deserve sovereignty over your own bodies, and we need to work towards a free market healthcare system. And the way we do that right now is you need to get involved locally. There are a lot of concierge medicine groups out there that will still look to their patients as being their primary goal and their primary purpose, and get away from these government funded, government-controlled entities where you have no control over your own sovereignty, over your own body anymore. If we do these things and we vote in elections, we can get this country back, we can get our healthcare back, and that's what I'm working for. I hope this show opened your guys' eyes to the politics of compliance. We will talk more about this in the future. You're listening to Dr. Scott Barber on America's Web Radio. This is the Doctor's Lounge. I'm out. I'll see you guys next time.
The views, opinions, and content of the show hosts and their guests appearing on America's Web Radio are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the station.
You're listening to America's Web Radio on the AmericasBroadcastNetwork.com. Thank you for listening.